Let's talk about this plan of yours. I think it's good, except it sucks. So let me do the plan, and that way it might be really good.
Hello, and welcome to It's Good Except It Sucks, a movie-by-movie and television series-by-television series hurtled through the Marvel Cinematic Universe. This time, we're taking a look at The Marvels, released in November 2023, when you could have saved cinema from being entirely devoured by the multiverse by going to see The Great Turkey Town Mystery instead. I'm Tim Worthington, and we'll be finding out what I made of The Marvels shortly. Meanwhile, joining us to give her thoughts on The Marvels is writer Una McCormack. Una, where can people find you?
Definitely find me on Blue Sky. I've kind of emigrated from Twitter, so it's same handle, at Una McCormack, but it's a little calmer and less angry there for the moment.
Okay, so before we go any further, Una, what happens in The Marvels?
I'm terrible at following plots, so let's see if I can do this. So I think the big thing about The Marvels is that it's the grand get-together of everyone who's kind of, everyone who counts in that universe. So you've got Captain Marvel, you've got Kamala Khan, Ms. Marvel, and you've also got Monica Rambeau, and they find that their powers have been entangled. They keep switching between each other as they use their powers. And the reason this becomes important is that the consequences of Captain Marvel's actions in the first movie are catching up with her, and Dar-Ben, leader of the Kree, let me get this the right way around, is coming after her. She wants to deal with the Annihilator and prevent the destruction of her people. And then really hijinks ensue. There's a musical number, which I enjoyed greatly. There's lots of fights, people hitting each other with things, and a large number of kittens. And I think that about covers it, doesn't it?
I think it pretty much does. And yes, the large quantity of hijinks really is important. But Una, we know what you think about Captain Marvel, and we know what you think about Ms. Marvel, but how much did you know about Monica Rambeau before you saw this?
So I had watched WandaVision, yeah, but a while ago now. I kind of broadly remembered, and of course I'd seen Captain Marvel as well, so I knew that connection, so I wasn't completely blind. And I think this movie does work if you don't really know much of the backstory. I think it fills you in on that quite quickly, because Lord only knows I don't remember this stuff going from film to film, so I need a pretty good prompt. So I think, yeah, you can kind of go in knowing very little, but I had seen WandaVision when it was on, and I'd enjoyed it with diminishing returns, I think, was how I enjoyed WandaVision. I think the first few episodes I really grabbed, and then I kind of, as it went on, I sort of went, oh, I'm enjoying this less. This is always a problem, isn't it?
It is, but there is the whole sort of issue of building towards this as a team of things. I mean, it's worth saying they've never really had in the comics the three, they've had them together in various permutations, but there's never been the big team up. In fact, there has previously been on two occasions a series of comics called The Marvels, one of which was, this was better than the other one. It was about press photographer's eye view with some of the big Marvel stories over the years. The other one was a very weird thing about sort of a misalignment to the whole Marvel universe, which is only from 2021, which didn't quite work. But when they said it was going to be called The Marvels, people were pointing towards both of those, and I was thinking, I hope it's just the three of them. And it was, and
yeah,
I was thrilled by that, because I was delighted to see them together. But I did wonder about how many people going in had seen WandaVision, had seen Ms. Marvel. And also, I don't quite get how, did you watch Secret Invasion?
So I watched the first episode and then I kind of forgot about it, basically.
I do not blame you, but there was a lot of talk about how, because it wasn't very good. And
yeah,
people said one of the reasons it wasn't very good was they didn't have enough time to work on it because it had to be out before this.
Yeah.
I saw very little crossover, apart from the fact there were Skrulls in both. The stories did not go together. So you got this odd thing of two things that people might not have seen that they need to see before this, and one thing that they absolutely did not need to see that they probably saw because Samuel L. Jackson was in it.
So I'm glad I didn't. I sort of thought, oh, I should probably have watched this before I'm talking about this movie. And then again, I forgot about it. Yeah. I didn't get around. I've had sort of, and maybe we all are a bit exhausted by this point. I'm right behind. I've still not watched watched the last Black Panther movie. I think there might be a Guardians of the Galaxy I've not seen, which is clearly mad. Possibly that meant I was a little bit fresher coming into this film, that I hadn't kind of glutted on stuff. So yeah, I forgot about Secret Invasion. And it sounds like I can keep forgetting about it.
Yeah, I think probably most people involved in it, most people who saw it, want to forget it, to be honest with you. I'm going to say, I thought this, despite, I mean, I'll come back to, I discount a lot of the reception it's had, but despite that, I thought this was fantastic. I don't see what anyone's issue with it is. It's a fun film with a lot of action, as you say, that has a coherent plot that goes from A to B with some surprises right at the end. And to be honest with you, I think more films should aspire to be like this. It was short as well. Well, relatively short, you know.
Yes.
Short compared to the Lavender Hill Mob or something.
No, no. And that, I think, was one of its chief virtues, actually. Some of these films have just got incredibly bloated now. I remember going to see the second Infinity War one and kind of checking online to go, right, is there a moment in the film where I can run to the loo, you know, about 110 minutes in or something? Can you tell me where there's a little longer where I can kind of sprint out? And then Eternals, I just didn't even bother going to the cinema. I watched it as a mini series over 3 days and really enjoyed it as a result. And frankly, I don't want that from these movies. I want to go in, I want 100 minutes of kind of like fights and quips, and then I want to come out feeling cheerful. And that's exactly what this film did. I didn't look at any of the reception because I knew exactly what it would be like. I'm not going to learn anything from that. So I thought, I'm going to go in, I want to be entertained, don't necessarily need to have my mind expanded, and I want to come out feeling chipper. And that's exactly what happened. And what more can you ask for? Absolutely professional job.
I think that's really all that most people should be asking for from, you know, a visit to the cinema. I don't like the idea there is now that you're sort of arms folded looking at everything else saying, but why aren't they being educated by cinema? Well, they'll go to see intellectually improving films if they want to.
Yeah, exactly. I watched Anatomy of a Fall the night before. Okay, all right. That's something I could sit there and kind of stroke my chin and ponder. Yeah, that's a woman director as well, isn't it? And then, you know, I want to sit with my kid and have a laugh and like the bit where Kamala's mother is, you know, kicking 10 bells out of people, you know. Or there's a whole dance sequence instead of a fight, which is really sly and fun. Or kittens are eating people. What is not to like?
Well, I really loved. I mean, you've hit on the three moments that I would recommend. You know, if I was pushing this film to anyone, I would mention them. One of them is the dancing, because I particularly love the bit where, obviously, on Aladdin, they only communicate in song. And they introduce the three of them into the royal chambers. And there is the line, three new faces, one could be more cheerful. Everyone looks at Monica. And the way, when they're processing along, Kamala's doing proper...
She's Bollywood, isn't
Bollywood
she?
Bollywood wedding dancing. And Monica's just sort of occasionally like... You know, she's probably got the coolest moves of the three of them. And she's just like occasionally like moving her hands or clicking one
she's
finger.
She's me at a wedding wishing I could let go, you know. And then the sheer horror of kind of poor Carol Danvers. Oh, no. Got to go through that. Let's cut to talking, please. Oh, a shout out. I watched the making of documentary as well. And shout out to the costumers and the makeup artists in that whole setup, because it is absolutely beautiful stuff. And I think in the making of, you get a really good close-up of stuff as well. And the detail and the kind of intricacy and the diversity of it. It's all kind of visually thematic to what this film is about. Which is, you know, it is a diverse film. And that's all there on screen. And I can imagine, you know, I said I didn't read any reception, but at the back of my mind, a little bit of me is mean enough to be laughing at how much the people who wouldn't enjoy this film wouldn't have enjoyed that section.
Exactly. And I think a lot of them are showing themselves up now. I mean, I used to think the biggest issue was, you know, sort of the intellectual snob about genre films. So, but I think it is the people have been trying to disguise the issues that they got. And I would point to the fact that thankfully it has been seen off now. But in the past couple of weeks, there was an attempt by a Disney shareholder to take over Disney by force. Mm-hmm. And his campaign speech, for want of a better word, was basically... He highlighted the Marvels and said, why do I have to have a film with three women and they're all from different races? Why do I have to have that? Like, they're not even disguising it anymore.
Yeah, why do I not have to have it, you know? Go and watch the whole of film. mate. Well, you know.
He doesn't have to have it. He can go off and watch. I believe there's a film with lots of men in, you know, very manly called Saltburn. He might enjoy that.
Yeah, yeah, that'd be super.
He'd drink it right up.
He'd love that one. Oh, well, I mean, it's not even in good faith, this stuff. It's just absolutely rubbish. I'm not going to say that The Marvels is the best film that I have ever seen. And I think Captain Marvel is a better film.
Yes.
But there's nothing wrong with it. It's fun. It's well made. It's entertaining. It's not long. It's what I liked from the cinema in the 1980s. Go along, have a bit of fun, eat some Revels. Come home, you know, it's and what I liked about it and what was nice was to have it all women, because that's so rare. I remember a very good friend of mine said this about the Ghostbusters reboot with all the women in. She said, I suddenly realised, sitting in the cinema watching that, how relaxing cinema can be and why it is that so many of my male friends like to go and see films. It was just really relaxing. And The Marvels was really relaxing in the same way. Nothing to dislike.
What is she doing?
Oh, she's respecting the floor.
How long do I have with my dad's partner this time?
Young, we are.
What is happening?
In danger.
The captain needs a help.
Oh, Alana's not afraid of her.
Invite her down, put her feet on the ground. Give me a chance here before it gets
slowly
messy.
To walk inside her walls and trust that you alone can't stop on our.
How many chapters of your Captain Marvel fan fiction is this giving you?
So many.
Don't forget.
Don't forget.
My princess from the stars.
Stop. We need to talk.
Okay, let's talk.
Oh, wait. He doesn't have to sing? Yeah, he's bilingual.
Well, what's been quite pleasing is seeing a lot of people were... I mean, I do partly understand how some people are fantasizing in this position. People said, when I saw it came out, I couldn't be bothered going to see it. But I have watched it on streaming now, and I quite enjoyed it. And that kind of feels like a real... When I say it's a victory, not just, you know, for me and people like that, it feels like, you know, a shared victory. It's like people thinking, oh, I might not enjoy this. Oh, hang on, I did.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And why was it that I thought I wouldn't? Oh, well, that didn't matter in the end, did it? So how's it doing on streaming? I know it didn't exactly do well box office, did it?
I haven't seen stats, but the aggregate scores on various review sites have gone up massively.
Good. I sort of find myself on Letterboxd and things with films like this. I sort of find myself adding like half a star because I know that there'll be a whole sort of statistically significant minority just giving it a bad faith review. Okay, all right, then. Well, let me put on my kind of counterweight to that, you know, which is very, you know, it's frustrating, is it? Because you feel like you're also acting in bad faith in a way. But it's not fair for a movie like this to be dissed. It's much better than people are making out.
And I do think as well, I mean, I'm not trying to make excuses here for the lack of interest, should we say, on the original release, because it did have a really poor box office opening. But I do think people may have to take into account the very difficult production history it's had, because this must have been on the board since at least 2019. They started work on it in 2021, obviously in the middle of the pandemic and social distancing. It got moved backwards and forwards. I mean, if you look at, not only is there a lead into it, you know, a direct one at the end of Ms. Marvel, in Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings, the post-credit scene is Carol going off to investigate the mission she's on at the start of this film. You know, that's quite a big distance. And then they did a lot of post-production work. I mean, it was partly to whip it into shape, and I think they did a good job there. But also, it was swapped around with Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania, which, you know, I don't think it's as bad as people say, but you can understand why they might have tried to get that out of the way quickly. So there's a pushback in the schedule. By that time, people have been hearing about it for 3 years or something.
Yeah, well, and then I guess if your expectation then is it's going to be this 3.5-hour mega blockbuster, it's not that kind of film. Maybe they felt it was slight. Maybe they'd not enjoyed several for a while now, so they didn't turn up. Maybe, you know, they didn't want to go because it was female-led. It didn't deserve that box office kicking. But a kind of box office kicking surely reflects more on the films that came before than that actual film, I always think.
There have been a run, even I will say this, of, should we say, mixed fortune films. I can understand why people didn't take to Eternals, but I loved it. You know, and then immediately after that, you got Spider-Man Far From Home, which is brilliant. It's been that up and downness, and Quantumania, not great. Wakanda Forever, I love, but it felt like it was setting your homework.
Yeah, Eternals, I think, is the last one I've seen before this, actually. That might be the one that people went, oh, I've just had enough of this. And then not even taking into account kind of pandemic viewing habits and whether people are going to actually turn out and go to the cinema. I think there's three or four I haven't seen in between this. I've definitely not seen Quantumania, whether I should.
Watch it when you're in a good mood, I would say.
Oh, right. Okay. So I'll pencil that in for 2032.
There have been all the TV series as well, so which is why I was so pleased to see Kamala's family in here. Not just in the... That's one of the problems with Quantumania, is people that you'd be looking forward to seeing basically just come on and say hello and disappear. Yeah. Whereas they're in the thick of the action throughout.
They are. And I think considering that when you bring... So I'm thinking of something like Firefly, where there's such a big cast, and then you bring everyone on screen for Serenity... And you think, oh my God, how are they going to handle nine people? And on the whole, they do it pretty well, I think. And you think, are they going to get enough screen time, like her brother and that sort of thing? And he doesn't get very much screen time. But what he does get is really good. And because Ms. Marvel is such a wonderful series, just glimpsing that kind of, how have they all accommodated to this new reality with Kamala? And the answer is, of course, completely brilliantly. There isn't much, because, of course, this is only a 100-minute film. But what's there is beautifully done. And that's very deft writing. That's people who know these characters to write them. And people who know how to play them as well. It's all just lovely.
There is one appearance, though, that I felt didn't quite work. But again, I think there's a reason for it, which is Valkyrie's cameo. Which is, I mean, I remember thinking when I saw it, this looks like it's been very heavily trimmed down for something longer. And there is a deleted scene where it makes more sense. You've got more interaction with Carol. And it just looks a bit better. But if that meant that we got a better film, because at one point they had Adam Warlock as a character in it, who obviously, well, not obviously to you, because you not seen it, but it's in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, and they thought it's a bit much having him on top of everything else. There was a time travel subplot, and they thought that's too confusing, take that out. So if as part of that we lost a little bit of context for Valkyrie, who it's still nice to see her, and nice to see her giving a knowing look to Carol as well, which I think is as close as they will be allowed to get in depicting the, should we say, the friendship. If the upshot of that was one cameo, just looked a bit like a cameo, I'm fine with that.
Yeah, and I can't see what else you could have shoehorned into that movie. It's really well edited. I don't think anything is wasted in terms of what's needed for the story, what's needed for the action to progress. I had to go and look Valkyrie up because I'd forgotten. And you're kind of watching something going, oh, I can hear kind of meaningful music, and meaningful looks. I need to go and look up who this is, because I can only memorise so much, and large portions of the brain are given over to, you know, Star Trek Enterprise, sadly. And that's all got to be held in the head where bits of the MCU could be happening. So that, and I think they rightly saw that, you know, not a large part of this audience must just not remember this stuff from one film to the next. I'm not even that part of the audience, because I come and talk on podcasts about them. So, you know, I'm not upper tier, but I'm kind of, you know, interested enough. But I think that was judged pretty well. You can't just overload these movies, because it just gets baffling. I hadn't seen that deleted scene, actually. I'm going to nip off and take a look at that. But that, that was a sort of moment where I went, oh, yeah, I'm going to have to go look this up now.
Even I understand that, because famously, after Infinity War had been out, when I saw the Lego set in the Davalier Forge, I thought, oh, yeah, that happened in that too.
Yes, exactly. Was that the bit where I nipped out to the loo, possibly?
Yeah. But we do, of course, have to mention the real star of the entire movie. No, not Samuel L. Jackson, although he is really good, but Goose.
Oh, yeah.
Who can make coffee now?
Oh, incredible. And now that I've watched the making of, it's like Petra Mark 2, isn't it? It's not the original Goose, is it? Goose has been recast. It's like, what's her name? Oh, Dallas.
Miss Ellie.
Miss Ellie, they kind of recast. I mean, obviously, Goose is a large part of the appeal of this. Again, I think it just gives those brilliant moments with Kamala's family, who are like, it's a cat. It's a cat. It's a cat. Oh, that is not a cat. what is going on here? And yeah, it doesn't stop being funny, I think. You know, cat has tentacles.
The army of kittens running down the stairs. Well, yes. That was the bit in the trailer that really had me excited.
Yeah. And doing it to memory as well is just... again, I'm enjoying it and I'm laughing. And the bad part of me is enjoying how much the people that will hate this movie must be hating that moment. But then, you know, I went to see that film of Cats and I kind of enjoyed myself. I was with two quite small kids who were really into Cats, as in the musical. They were both into Cats as cats and they were both into Cats the musical. That was the way to see that, I think, was with two small people who were enjoying themselves immensely. And also, it's one of those things where you go, well, of course, that's how you're going to get people out of here without enough transportation. Of course, you're going to have the kittens eat them.
I've got to ask as well about, because this is something I don't entirely have, you know, a full perspective on for reasons that become obvious. But I really liked the dynamic and the chemistry between Monica, Carol and Kamala.
Yeah.
And the way it played, not just their differing personalities, but their differing life experience and emotion against each other. The bits that really stuck with me were the fun they're having training to use their intermingled powers. But also, when Monica's upset because she's read Carol's mind and seen about what happened to her mother, Kamala walks up and hugs her about half her height, like a big sister.
Yeah.
And I did think, this isn't something I have seen very often in films, but I'm a male viewer thinking that, so I would like to know whether there is any basis in my response to it.
So I think, this is, they've clearly, just from listening to interviews, this was clearly very much at the heart of what the actors were doing. And I will say, I think a large part of that is down to Iman Vellani and clearly how adored she is by everyone who's working with her. That's not to diss the other two actors, but I can imagine that if you're working with someone with that, it will guide your performances towards a sort of empathic and intuitive connection with each other. But I think that Iman Vellani's kind of enthusiasm and energy that she expresses in all the interviews that we see and the way that people talk about her, I think it probably generates a lot of goodwill and empathy and connection on the set. And I wonder if some of that transfers into performance. I think she's just something really special, isn't she? And that, I think, maybe has contributed to the tone. I think that's there throughout. They're lovely performances and everyone's sort of dealing with the reality of being a superhero in a different way. You know, it's still exciting and fresh for Kamala, but perhaps this puts her family into danger. It's all a little bit more ambivalent for Monica because of, you know, the cost of it. And I think perhaps Carol is seeing, like I said at the start, you know, the consequences of her own actions. And, you know, it's like Time Lord Victorious, isn't it? It can come up and catch you. I love that sort of movement and shifting between them all and how they're kind of just like the entanglement, aren't they? That each one has to come to the fore at some point and be the one that takes care of the others. It's very touching.
Well, and speaking of the entanglement, I think Zoe Ashton has been overshadowed slightly, inevitably because of the star billing for three female leads, but she is great as Dar-Ben.
Oh,
she is a sympathetic character who is just a bit annoying.
Yeah. Well, what I love about it is the kind of shell shock to it, that there's a sort of, she's simultaneously in denial, and this is in her performance, she's wide-eyed about the reality of what's happening. She's really frightening. She's got absolutely nothing to lose. And you are sympathetic in many ways. she's not going to be persuaded by any touchy-feeliness, is she? There's this sort of, it's not cruelty, there's this sort of hardened edge to her. And then again, in interviews, they're all saying, oh, Zawi was so lovely and fluffy. And then she kind of, you know, the camera started rolling. You went, oh, it's kind of... No, I think it's really good. Good villain.
And it was great to see Samuel L. Jackson back on form after, because I would say his last couple of appearances, I mean, Secret Invasion was the most guilty of this.
Yeah.
But there were other, when he made smaller cameos and things, he wasn't quite given the usual sort of Nick Fury, you know, yeah, comic exasperation, alacrity, yeah, sarcasm, you know. It was all very gritty and serious.
Yeah.
And I don't think that really worked, because not just the character needs that, his portrayal needs that. That's who Samuel L. Jackson is.
Yeah.
That's why we first noticed him in things like Do the Right Thing and,
yeah,
Pulp Fiction.
Yeah.
And to have underplayed that, missed the target. But here he was absolutely, completely back on top.
Absolutely. It. It's like, what have I done to deserve this? It's the kind of, you know, I love that note throughout the performance. And again, it's one of that things where you sort of think how big the cast actually is. And then when you sort of think about each person on screen, you go, no, I don't think they've been shortchanged, actually. I think they've had a really good opportunity to show what their character is. But yeah, he's great. It's the whole humour of the film, isn't it? The film is taking itself completely seriously for what it is, which means it's not taking itself as seriously as perhaps other films in this saga do. It knows exactly what it is.
Well, despite some public criticism of her, including from Disney, which I thought was dreadful,
yeah,
but I think Nia DaCosta did a brilliant job, and
yep,
I hope she gets more.
I hope so
to
too.
Do on the basis of this,
yep,
because it was great.
Yep, complete, you know, absolutely delivered. I haven't seen any of her other stuff. I've been looking for Little Woods, but I've not been able to find it. I don't know if you've seen any of her other films.
I have seen the Candyman remake she did, which had Teona Parris in it.
Right, okay, yeah.
Which I really like.
I'm not a big horror fan, but I'll take a look.
Maybe swerve that one then.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sort of, you know, I just try and watch female directors. I like to kind of pick a female director and then chase up everything they've done. So I'll probably get round to it, unless it's too horror, in which case it kind of violates my no horror rules. But I would like to see Little Woods, which I think looks really interesting. But I think it might be on Apple, and I've not stretched to Apple yet.
The most unfortunate detail about the release of this, though, was that because of all the delays and the swapping around and so on, it came out in the middle of huge industrial action.
Mm-hmm.
And we had the really, I would say, pitiful situation where, you know, you had certain newspaper columnists literally at the start of a sentence bemoaning the behaviour of studio bosses. Mm. And then, you know, 3 minutes later, laughing at the takings of the Marvels on its opening weekend.
Yeah,
not,
yeah,
3 minutes later, the same sentence. I'm mixing my metaphors.
Yeah.
I'm no better than them. But I found that ridiculous. That is literally, you cannot be angry about something and then,
yeah,
mock the consequences of it.
People just like to carp, don't they? And I mean, what I'm just relieved about is that this wasn't a film that we are never going to get to see. I think if it had been just a little bit further down the slate, this is one that they would have gone, well, we're going to write that one off, aren't we? What's is that Women? Is that got Women in it? We'd better write that one off.
I genuinely want to see Batgirl, and I don't even like DC that much.
But... No, I don't like DC, but I want to see Batgirl. I want to see Wile E. Coyote as well, which is absolute travesty. And I think if this film had just been a little bit further down the pipeline, we wouldn't have got to see it. So, you know, thank goodness.
Well, thank goodness we did, because we got two really intriguing post-credit scenes. The first of which, in a lovely kind of haphazard echo of the very first one, of the very first Iron Man film, we get Kamala turning up at Kate Bishop's house,
yeah,
trying to recruit her into the Young Avengers.
Yeah,
and I,
yeah,
love that. Had you actually seen Hawkeye? Did you know who Kate was?
Yes, I did, yeah. It took a moment, but went, hang on, I've seen that one, which
I've
also...
seen that dog eating a pizza.
Yeah, I really liked that one, so I enjoyed that. And presumably they're thinking, our demographic must be ageing out. We've got to get the young people to watch this series again. So that was good fun. And I, yes, I did remember her, and anything that Kamala is in is obviously a lark. So happy with that.
And what didn't occur to me until much later was that, you know, if we've got Kamala and Kate talking about bringing Cassie Lang in, and we've also had America Chavez introduced, and a couple of other, the Young Avengers are going to be mostly female.
Well, yeah, let's see if it gets canned.
P.S. Morgan won't be happy and say, oh, I'm going to invent a male Hawkeye to show them. I'm like, yeah, can I already this one?
Imagine if they cast Meghan Markle in it, his head would explode.
Oh, that has to happen.
A Meghan Markle cameo, perfection.
But the other one, and at the time I thought, what? Where are they going with this? Because it was so completely unexpected, is Monica, having crossed over into the other reality to, you know, save ours, wakes up in the Fox X-Men universe.
Yeah, that is what happened, isn't it? Yeah, I thought, because that I know nothing about, that's a complete closed book to me, except for Logan. There were enough visual cues that I went, I believe some streams of reality are getting confused here. So even I, as the hapless, kind of clueless person that I am, sort of managed to pick that up. So good, I'm glad you've confirmed that.
Yes, we got Kelsey Grammer as Hank McCoy. And we also get Lashana Lynch, having played an alternate version of Maria in several previous things, including being Captain Marvel in Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, appears here as Binary. You know, obviously it's setting up something, because, you know, you've got a major character that's just been introduced to suddenly a different universe. At that point, nobody knew that Deadpool 3 was going to be called Deadpool and Wolverine, with the two of them apparently lost between realities in some of the clips that come out so far. So it is obviously heading towards that, and I could not be more excited. Especially because with Deadpool, you know you're on safe ground. You know there will not be a lack of explanation, because he will spend half his time turning the camera.
Telling you
don't know that Kelsey Grammer was in Fox X-Men films.
But I'm here to tell you. Exactly. That's the kind of helping hand I need through a film these days.
I mean, I am hopeful, but, you know, there have been ups and downs recently. I do think Deadpool and Wolverine is a good chance to course correct that. To comment on the things that haven't worked, to push them in a new direction, to bring everything together. I'm very hopeful about that, to be honest.
Yeah, that does sound like a good comment. I might turn out for that one. Can't take the kid, but...
No, it is definitely R-rated from the look of
it. Yeah, I think so.
Okay, so there's only one thing left for me to ask now. Una, if you had a cat capable of swallowing and regurgitating large and heavy objects, what would you use it for?
Well, we could swallow Piers Morgan and not regurgitate.
I'm going to invent a male cat that doesn't swallow. Yes, that's cats, Piers.
There are many things I would like swallowed, but as I say, regurgitation would not be on the cards.
I suppose you cannot say further than that. Una, thank you, and Excelsior.
Thank you. Enjoyed it as ever.
If you've enjoyed this, don't forget you can find more editions of It's Good Except It Sucks and plenty more besides, including details of my book Keep Left Swipe Right at timworthington.org.